Right now? Are we on the air, lady skill,
yes,
now?
Yes, we are.
I'm sorry. Hey, yo, bust the move.
Allo, c'est Vieux Farka Touré. Vous écoutez WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill. Cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Bethany Bump is reporting for the Times Union. Columbia Memorial Hospital in Hudson is one of a dozen hospitals in the Capital Region to implement visitation guidelines effective Wednesday, December 11th. The restrictions are part of an effort to reduce the spread of flu and other infectious diseases to at-risk hospital patients. The guidelines were issued after an announcement from the State Health Commissioner Howard Zucker that flu is now prevalent in New York. Hospitals implementing the restrictions include Albany Medical Center, Albany Memorial Hospital and St. Peter's Hospital in Albany, Ellis Hospital, Bellevue Women's Center, and Sunnyview Rehabilitation Hospital in Schenectady, Saratoga Hospital, Glens Falls Hospital, St. Mary's Healthcare in Amsterdam, Nathan-Littauer Hospital in Gloversville, and Columbia Memorial. The restrictions include a maximum of two visitors in a patient's room at any time, a maximum of two visitors in a patient's room at any one time. Children 12 years old and younger are barred from visiting. And visitors with various symptoms of flu or other respiratory infections will be prevented from visiting patients as well. Visitors will also be urged to use hand washing stations before entering and leaving a patient's room. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Democrat David Clegg defeated Republican Michael J. Kavanaugh by 77 votes for Ulster County District Attorney. The final tally on December 11th was 26,331 to 26,254, according to Republican Commissioner of Elections Thomas Turco. After the November 5th election, Kavanaugh led by 3 votes, with 1,300 absentee and affidavit ballots to be counted. The result will stand unless Kavanaugh appeals any of the rulings on challenged ballots made by State Supreme Court Justice Richard McNally. During the count, 180 ballots were challenged by Republicans and 90 were challenged by Democrats. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Melissa Locker is reporting for Time Magazine. Merriam-Webster announced December 10th they had chosen they as the 2019 word of the year. The singular they is a pronoun used to refer to a person whose gender identity is non-binary, a word that itself was added to the Merriam-Webster's online dictionary in September. The gender-neutral pronoun is used in place of he or she. While they may be increasingly common in modern language, its use as a singular pronoun is not new. As Merriam-Webster writes, and I quote, English famously lacks a gender-neutral singular pronoun to correspond neatly with singular pronouns like everyone or someone, and as a consequence, they has been used for this purpose for over 600 years. And you can read the full story in Time magazine.
Sarah Trafton reports for Columbia Green Media that the Catskill Planning Board voted December 10th to override the Green County Planning Board's vote against a proposed festival at the former Friar Tuck Inn. But the Catskill Planning Board did not approve the Hello Panda Lantern Festival, as insurance and other issues are still unresolved. The county, which is owed $698,000 in taxes on the Friar Tuck property, said the former resort is now too unsafe to host a festival. The town of Catskill disagreed, but could not solve all the other issues to turn over a special use permit. Quote, unless the town attorney is assured that the town is adequately covered from liability, this board will not approve this site plan, unquote, Catskill Town Board Chairperson Joseph Izzo said. Quote, the applicant has financial issues with the county. We would not accept indemnification by the applicant in lieu of the insurance carrier. That is off the table, unquote. If the board approves the festival at its January 14th meeting, the festival would be limited to 100 visitors a day between the hours of 9 a.m. and 11 p.m. with no food or drinks served. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Bill Williams is reporting for WCTW-FM. Tuesday, December 10th, was a tough one for commuters on the Rip Van Winkle Bridge and the Greenport Roundabout after four accidents occurred in less than 12 hours. Greenport Fire and Rescue was called to a two-car accident just before 8:30 a.m. The second crash happened in the backup from the first accident. In the first accident, an older woman was examined after complaining of head pain, but there were no injuries reported in the second. Greenport Fire and Rescue once again responded just after 5:30 p.m. when two cars crashed into each other at the roundabout. As crews were attending to the occupants of those vehicles, two other cars collided on the opposite side of the circle, just like occurred that morning. The Columbia County Sheriff's Office is investigating, and you can read both stories at 985thecat.ihot.com.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that with 8 of 23 Republican state senators not running for re-election next year, Senate Minority Leader John Flanagan was bombarded with questions December 11th about GOP electoral chances in 2020. Quote, I've been here for 33 years. I've spent 19 of 33 years in the minority, unquote, Flanagan said. Quote, I know what it means to be in the minority. I know what it means to fight, to claw back, to get things done, unquote. But in a presidential election year with Democrats determined to remove the commander-in-chief, they don't agree with Flanagan about the electoral chances of Republicans. Quote, every day we see another Republican senator abandon the sinking ship and announce their retirement, unquote, said Mike Murphy, a spokesperson for the Senate Democrats. Quote, having no money, no candidates, and no ideas is a bad combination, unquote. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins predicted December 9th that Democrats would pick up at least three seats next year. George Amador, who represents Greene and Schoharie counties, is among the Republicans not trying to retain their seat in 2020. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
The Daily Freeman is reporting the findings of a new report from the Marist Bureau of Economic Research at Marist College, which found that more than 43% of working residents of the Hudson Valley are employed in New York City. The study looked at a county-level detail for Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester counties between the years of 2015 and 2017. Marist found that Ulster County residents are most dependent on intra-regional employment at 74.1%, while Westchester County was the least dependent, with just under 49% working in the Hudson Valley.
The largest demographic of those holding more than one job was 30 to 55 years old, and the number of people between the ages of 55 and 69 in the workforce increased by almost 11,000 between 2015 and 2017, while the number of workers aged 30 to 54 declined by just under 1,300. And you can read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
Representative Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck, voted for the National Defense Authorization Act, while Paul Tonko, a Democrat from Amsterdam, voted against the bill on December 11th. The bill passed 377 to 48. Both Delgado and Tonko were on the conference tasked with reconciling the differences between the House and Senate versions of the NDAA and complained about the lack of transparency in discussions, writing an op-ed in the Times Union. They both were stymied in attempts to add additional provisions addressing PFAS contamination. Quote, "While the process to get here is far from what I would have hoped, I welcome the inclusion of my PFAS Right to Know Act to finally require polluters to report to the EPA and reveal where this contamination exists. This is an important step to help our communities and shows that had this been a more transparent process, we could have included additional measures," unquote. Tonko explained his no vote, quote, "I am disappointed that the NDAA is not addressing PFAS pollutants with the urgency needed to safeguard our communities and the American people," unquote, Tonko said. Quote, "For years, these forever chemicals have been entering our air and water, putting countless families at risk of exposure to these dangerous and potentially deadly pollutants. Democrats in the House have long pushed for Congress to take the necessary steps to protect our drinking water systems and work to restore the many towns, cities, and military bases that have already been contaminated."
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 29 degrees. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 20. On Friday, a chance of rain after 1 p.m., mostly cloudy with the temperature high near 40 degrees. And Friday night, rain with the temperature low of around 36. And that's your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties. Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Friday, December 13th, the tale of the wooden puppet who dreams of becoming a real boy gets a twist by the pantaloons in Pinocchio, all strung out, at the Ghent Playhouse on Town Hall Road at 8 p.m. Brass bands perform, including Brasskill, Pontoon, and Brass Queens, at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill starting at 8:15 p.m. There should be a live broadcast until 10 on 90.7 FM, and the entire show will be available at WGXC.org around 9. On Saturday, December 14th, learn about the native and invasive vines at the Eldred Research Center and warm up with some delicious hot chocolate and make a festive grapefruit wreath at 1 p.m. on Pond Hill Road in Rensselaerville. Danny Grammersdorf French, Kate Devine, Alexa Wilding, Deanie Hartzog-Mislock, Anna Victoria, and Daniel Seward all perform at the Spotty Dog Books and Ale in Hudson starting at 7 p.m. MacDowell Fellow Dan Tepfer explores the intersection between the natural and mechanical by programming a Yamaha Disclavier to respond in real time to the music he improvises at the piano, while another program turns the music into stunning animated visual art at Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House at 7 p.m. Swing Dance with One Straw Revolution at Dewey Hall in Sheffield, Massachusetts, starting at 7:30 p.m. The tale of the wooden puppet who dreams of becoming a real boy gets a twist by the pantaloons in Pinocchio All Strung Out at the Ghent Playhouse on Town Hall Road at 8 p.m. With over 50 years of shared musical history together, the Early Americans Trio has something special to say at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, starting at 8:30 p.m. with a live web stream on WGXC.org.
WGXC 90.7 FM, Eastern Hudson, Catskill.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Amy Rigby of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Aunque no me mires, yo lo sé. Tú llegaste pa' inspirarme en mis canciones. Aunque no te toque, te besé. Te vete por siempre y pa' volar de noche. Sobreviviendo a punta de fe. Y en el café, nada que contarle a mis amigas. Si tú eres solo para mí y yo pa' ti. Aunque no me pidas, yo estaré. En mi mente sabes que me corresponde.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I go to school at MC Smith Intermediate School, I think it's called now.
Who knows?
Yeah.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love.
Books we don't love quite as much. Or bookish. Despise with a passion.
Yeah. Or bookish things.
All that good stuff. And we're usually here with our friend Amelia.
Yes.
She's not here today.
Yeah.
But shout out to Amelia.
Yes.
She's great.
Yeah. Last time she was doing the Honorable Society, I think.
Oh, yeah. The Honor Society.
Yeah. She's too honorable.
She's too honorable for us.
Yeah.
We're so dishonorable.
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm dishonorable.
I don't know. Are you in the Honor Society?
No. That's because I'm a
dishonorable kid.
Dishonorable. No, I honor my friends.
What if we're all dishonorable if we're not in the Honor Society?
Then,
did you ever think of that?
Well, you don't have to be in the Honor Society. Mm-hmm. You just have to be honorable.
Anyways, we're proud of Amelia that she's in the Honor Society. And that she is so honorable that she can't make it to radio sometimes.
Yeah.
But I like to joke, like, why does she have to be so honorable?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
So we're hoping she's reading some great books while she's away from us.
Yeah.
Have you been reading anything recently?
Well, I read a few things recently.
Like what?
Like my friend Nevaeh's comics.
Ooh. That's cool.
Yeah.
What are they about?
They're about a game called Meep City. And
what's Meep City?
It's like where you can dress your character up if you don't have any Robux and make it look like you have some, even though you don't.
Hmm.
And there are new hairstyles, and like you can make customize your house. You can get a Meep. You can customize your Meep. You can
so a Meep's like a little person?
No, a Meep. You know Club Penguin? My sister and brother compared it to Club Penguin. It's like a knockoff of Club Penguin is what they say. Even though Meep is like a ball with eyes, a smiley face, and it can be any color.
Hmm.
Except you have to be a plus to get any color. You only get, like, basic colors if
you're not... Is it a free game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roblox is a free game.
No, but the Meep City thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some games you have to use Robux for, which you can't earn. Every single time you play a game, you have to actually pay for Robux.
Like, you have to pay it with real money?
Yes.
Oh.
And I'm sad.
Yeah.
And another one that she did was about Flee the Facility.
Which you wrote a comic about, too.
Yeah.
And that's a Roblox thing as well?
Yes.
How is hers different than yours? Or are they very similar?
They're similar, kind of. Except we have different twists and different normal ones that she showed me. It's like more of the classic one that I got this weekend from being, like, dumb because I didn't look into the chat. Because they said, Lena, don't come after me. Because I was the last player. And what did I do? I came after Nevaeh. But the person who was doing that was a real camper.
Oh.
I hate campers. And also in her newest comic, she revealed me in Juliana's hiding spot.
No!
Hiding spot was under the table since the beast can't get us.
That's a good hiding spot.
Yeah.
They can't, I guess, depending.
Yeah, they can't crawl, which is hard. So, in Meep City...
The beast?
Yeah. The beast can't crawl. They
Poor
can
beast.
Only... They can be, like, a special member, which is, like, VIP. And they can have special stuff, but if you don't have Robux... Then you only get one option, which is runner, which makes you go faster than the people. And I hate it whenever the beast is like, oh, you want to escape? And then they use runner on me.
Sounds rough.
Yeah. And they whack me, and I don't like being whacked.
That's fair. At least it's just a character.
Yeah.
Not real life.
Yeah, or else I would probably just die the instant that I see the beast.
Just faint?
Yeah.
Pass out?
Yeah, I forgot what the word was. Hmm. In Meep City, like, it's just about her customizing her character. And
oh, in the comic she wrote about it?
Yeah, and her just, like, being explained how Meep City works, and then I teleport to her. And I didn't get to see the rest of the comic because she didn't show us the rest of the comic. Mm-hmm.
Secrets.
Yeah.
Will be revealed someday.
Yes. Someday, but not today.
Are you still doing Hudson Reads?
Yeah.
What have you been reading in that?
We're reading, I forgot what it was called.
What's it about?
It's about these kids solving a mystery. It's a Jigsaw Jones one.
Hmm.
And there was a medal that went missing.
A medal?
Yeah.
Like a like an award?
Yeah, medal? A medal award, because, like, there's this girl named Rain who made a contest. And I love the joke about Rain in the book. The joke about Rain is, does she have a sister named Partly Cloudy?
Wah, wah.
I think that's actually really funny and ironic. So, basically, they're trying to solve this mystery. They think that Solovsky stole the medal award thing. But my first suspect is the ferret in the pet store.
A ferret? That'd be cute.
Yeah.
He has, like, a secret stash of medals and shiny things.
Yeah, because ferrets are like, ooh, shiny, and then they take stuff like that, right?
I don't know. I haven't known that many ferrets.
I'm pretty sure, like, most ferrets do that.
But it seems like something they would do.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of little creatures do that.
Yeah.
They, like, store up.
Like mice or squirrels,
mm-hmm.
or other stuff. So, yeah.
That's cool. I'm curious who it'll be.
Yeah.
Is the suspense killing you, or are you doing okay?
I'm doing okay because I just can do okay, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've been reading on far ends of the age spectrum. So I've been reading adult fiction and picture books lately.
Can I know about the picture books first?
Let's see. I've read a bunch in the past week or so.
Wow.
Yeah, I read a lot, and I read a lot of picture books, as you know. So far this year, as of today, which we're recording on Monday, December 9th, I've read 573 books this year.
Oh my God.
And that includes picture books, hence the large number. What are some of my favorites? There was a really sweet one called Waiting for Winter by Sebastian Meschenmoser. Not sure if I'm saying his name right. I'd read a different book by him that I really liked, which the name I'm forgetting, but it's about the same characters, which are all woodland creatures. There's a squirrel, a hedgehog, and a bear. And the other one was set in, like, spring or summer. And this one is right before winter, and these animals have just learned about snow, and they want to, like, stay awake to see the snowfall. Oh. So they, like, are trying to stay awake to see the snowfall, but they've only had a verbal description of snow. So they know it's supposed to be white and soft and shiny, but they don't really know what it looks like. So they go around looking for it in case maybe, like, winter has already started. Maybe the snow already came, and they go around looking for it. And it's funny what they find that they decide is snow before the snow actually comes.
Okay.
I'll give you one spoiler. The hedgehog finds a toothbrush. And he decides that that is snow. And then he pictures all of these toothbrushes falling from the sky.
Oh my God.
So that one's really cute. And it's a fun, like, winter read.
Isn't it called Waiting for Winter?
Mm-hmm. Because they're waiting for winter.
Oh, it kind of made me think of Welcome Comfort that we just read today.
Hmm.
And do you want me to tell you
about Sure.
it? So it's about this boy named Welcome. And another part of his name is Comfort. And he's being bullied because his name is Welcome. And also they're like, what kind of name is Comfort? And, like,
it's a very nice name, actually.
Yeah. And that was really mean. Like, it's like saying, what kind of name is Emily?
Like, what kind of name is Emily?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like saying that. And he was, like, real chubby, and they're like, oh, you're real chubby. And there's this man who I can't remember what his name was, but we'll call him Mr. Q.
Because why not?
Yeah, and also his name starts with a Q, or it sounds like a Q. I forgot what his name mm-hmm. was. So he is also chubby too, and so like he was friends with Welcome, and it was starting, and people were bullying him, and it was like close to Christmas because it's a Christmas story, and so he's like really sad, and he's like, Santa Claus isn't real. And my first, I'm not going to tell you what my first thing I thought you about was.
Okay.
So Mr. Q was like, really, because Santa Claus is real.
Obviously.
And he's like, well, I don't think so. We all know that Santa Claus isn't real. It's like kind of what he was saying. And he's like, but then who leaves down the presents?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just lost hope. And he's like, well, I don't get any presents any year that I've had a family. And I actually feel bad. And this is the part that I didn't tell the listeners. Welcome actually doesn't have any, like, his actual parents. He's actually a foster child, and he has to go to so many foster homes, and he's like, even if Santa was real, he couldn't even find me since he's moving from foster mm-hmm. home to foster home. And so Christmas comes, Mr. Q has to pack up to go north, and then he leaves. He keeps on waking up on Christmas Eve, on the night, like, where it turns into Christmas Day. And he's like, Santa Claus is real, Santa Claus is real. And then he wakes up, and he sees Santa Claus. And I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm not going to continue okay. telling the story because it has spoilers, kind of.
We do like to avoid those.
Yeah.
I can tell you about another one of the picture books I read.
Yeah.
That was very nice. I'm always curious what age range some picture books are for, because there's such a range of content in them. And this one has some more serious issues in it. So I think it could be for a wide range of ages, but definitely has some sensitive material that parents would want to read it with their kids and like be ready for some tougher discussions. It's called The Phone Booth in Mr. Hirota's Garden, and it's by Heather Smith and Rachel Wada, does the illustrations. And it's based on a true story, although it's not an exact story, like the names are changed and everything. So the exact parts of the story are not the same. But there's a young man named Makio, and he lives next door to Mr. Hirota. And both of them experience a great loss as a result of a tsunami that comes and takes away Makio's father and Mr. Hirota's wife. And so Mr. Hirota, as a way of coping with the loss of his wife, builds a phone booth in his garden that has a phone, but that's not plugged into anything, so it's not a functioning phone. And he uses the phone booth as a way of communicating to his lost wife. And so Makio starts doing that as well, communicating with his father, and other people in the village also go there to talk with their lost ones.
So, like, is it public? Wait.
Well, it's on his property, but he allows people to come and use it. And it's based on the story of a man. Let me see. Yeah, it's inspired by the true story of the wind phone in Atsuchi, Japan, which was created by artist Itaru Sasaki. He built the phone booth so he could speak to his cousin who had passed, saying, "My thoughts couldn't be relayed over a regular phone line. I wanted them to be carried on the wind." The Tohoku earthquake and tsunami in 2011 destroyed the town of Otsuchi, claiming 10% of the population. Residents of Otsuchi and pilgrims from other affected communities have been traveling to the wind phone since the tsunami. And it's a really beautiful picture book. The illustrations are gorgeous, and it's just a very nice message. And it makes you, if you've lost anyone you cared about in your life, it makes you think about, like, what would you want to say to them, and how do you communicate with them when you want to, or do you? So it's a beautiful book. Again, it's, you know, sensitive subject. Because there's a time in our lives where we don't realize what death is, and, you know, that people can be taken away sometimes in a spur of a moment. Mm-hmm. But a very nice book.
Emily, I can hear you wanting to cry.
Oh, I'm okay. No crying on the radio.
Yeah. And also,
can I tell you about one other beautiful picture book?
Yes.
That I thought was very interesting. It's called The Thing About Bees, A Love Letter by Shabazz Larkin. And it's an interesting book that's like an informational picture book about bees. But it's not just informational. It has like sort of a storyline to it and characters. But the author of the book and the artist, who he does the illustrations as well. So he created the book because he's terrified of bees. And he's found in his life that his way of dealing with his fear is to like learn as much as possible about the thing he's afraid of. And he didn't want to pass on his fear of bees to his kids. So he made this picture book meant for kids that's talking about bees and things to know about bees and like which ones to leave alone and what to do if one of them stings you.
Oh, I think I need to show this to Nevaeh because she's scared of one tiny little bee.
And bees are important too.
Yeah.
So it talks about that as well. There's like sort of an appreciation for bees within this text, but then there's also like this sometimes they can be rude. So it says, sometimes bees can be a bit rude. They fly in your face and prance on your food.
Yes. And not to mention, once I went to church and they were having a special event. I got a soda. I left it open. And one giant bee who was looking for sugar decided to go into my soda. It died in there. And I was sad because that meant I couldn't drink my soda anymore because the bee died in there.
Are you sure it was a bee and not like a yellow jacket?
What's a yellow sometimes, jacket?
Because there's all different kinds of stinging creatures. And some of them look an awful lot alike. But some of them are different. And a yellow jacket looks kind of like a bee. But they tend to be a little bit more aggressive. And if like one stings you, you're likely going to get stung by another one. I once got stung by a lot of yellow jackets. Luckily, there was a big pool of water nearby and I just jumped in. Ooh. And then took a lot of Benadryl. Or like allergy medicine.
Wait, you're allergic to bees?
I don't need like an EpiPen or anything, but I was like swelling up from all the stings.
Oh.
It was not fun.
Okay.
And one time I got stung by something where I was writing a letter to somebody on a little piece of paper, and then the wind blew and it caught the piece of paper and took it away from me. And in midair, the piece of paper ran into some kind of stinging creature and hit it in the midair. And then I went to go get my piece of paper. And while I was getting my piece of paper, it stung me.
Oh,
like
no.
I had thrown the paper at it or something.
It's acting
and I was like, come
on. Oh my God. It's acting like, hey, you threw this paper at me. Now I'm going to throw this book at you.
Sting, sting. Anyways, that one was really pretty too. So yeah, those are my top picture books recently. I also finished two of the adult fiction books that I'd been reading for a long time, which I've already talked about on the show, so I won't talk about them again. But I finished The Roundhouse by Louise Erdrich, which was great, and Disappearing Earth by Julia Phillips, which was also great.
My question is, what were the series that you talked about that you read for a long time on the show? Like, we know it's Paper Girls without you read it.
Comic series?
Well, like, you told us that there was two books that you already told us about, like, two book series, I think.
Yeah, so one is The Roundhouse by Louise Erdrich, which is the story of a young man named Joe, whose mother comes home one day really shaken up and not herself, and it comes to light that she's been attacked, like, seriously attacked, and you know, the police get involved, but there's some complications because they live on tribal lands and there's some issues about like, where did the crime take place? Is it on tribal land? Is it on state land? Would we involve the federal government? And so there's some complications around that. And Joe isn't happy with the job that law enforcement is doing to try to figure out who attacked his mother and to like seek justice for her. And so he decides to team up with his friends and try to solve the mystery of who hurt his mother so that he can protect his family. So that was a very good book, The Roundhouse by Louise Erdrich. And then the other one I read is called Disappearing Earth by Julia Phillips. And that was a debut novel. And it's set in Kamchatka Peninsula of Russia, which is, if you think of where Russia is on the globe, it's the far eastern end of Russia. And kind of like across the water from Alaska. And it centers on several characters. But in the first chapter, there's two young women. I believe they were 8 and 13. And they are out on the town. And a man convinces them to come into his van. And they are taken away.
Who convinces someone to go into their van, even if it's like, I have candy? Your favorite
candy,
like Jolly
Ranchers.
Well,
I'm glad that you won't
fall
for this.
Like, even if they say I had chocolate, I'd say, prove it, and then...
You'd say, prove it, and then you'd get in the van?
No.
Maybe he did have chocolate.
No, they'd have to show me. I'd be at a safe distance to run, and then when they turn around so they can show me, I run away.
Mm-hmm.
So, boom.
And I'm sorry, they were 8 and 11. I double-checked. I fact-checked myself. I was thinking 8 and 13, but 8 and 11. And then the book goes through the year, so chapter by chapter, it moves forward a month. But each chapter centers on certain individual, and it skips around on who it's covering, of different people that live on this peninsula and how their lives are in some ways impacted by this abduction that takes place in the first chapter. So one of the people it covers is a woman that witnessed the abduction, but didn't realize what she was seeing until the girls were reported missing. And then there's the mother of the two girls. And then there's some other people that are more loosely connected. But it's a very interesting story. And it took me a long time to read, in part because I started listening to it on audio, and then the audiobook loan ran out, and so I didn't have that anymore. And then I got the book and was able to finish it. And we were talking about suspense earlier. The last chapter, which was very long, was so suspenseful that I stayed up really late finishing it. So it was, I just had to know what happened in the end.
Yeah.
But it was an excellent book. And it both makes you want to go to Kamchatka and not to go to Kamchatka.
Yeah.
So it's hard to want to go somewhere where, like,
where
bad things
like,
happen to people.
Yeah, or
but
where there's
it looks
a book
like a, I looked up pictures of the peninsula and it looks really beautiful.
I forgot where peninsula was.
I can show you a picture on a map.
Is a peninsula a peninsula?
A peninsula is a peninsula.
I'm very smart.
How did you know? So the definition of a peninsula is a piece of land almost surrounded by water or projecting out into a body of water.
Oh, so it's basically like Florida?
Yeah. Our listeners could also look up Kamchatka Peninsula if they so choose to see beautiful pictures of this wonderful, beautiful land.
Emily?
Lena?
Have you ever been to the Bermuda Triangle?
I'm there right now.
No,
I've never been to the Bermuda Triangle.
Have you ever heard about it?
But I know very little about it.
I know a lot about it.
What do you know?
So I know that...
Oh, we don't have time to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we're over the time. But anyways.
I'm sad.
Yeah, look who's crying now.
Wah. I'm crying to the mic.
But we hope everyone had a great week. Or has a great week. We hope everyone had a great week. And continues to have a great week.
Yes.
And reads lots of good books.
Yes.
Or bad ones.
Yes.
But don't spend too much time on the bad ones unless you have to for homework.
Yeah. Or you could just spend time with cats.
Or that. Hope you all have a good week. Happy reading.
Happy reading.
Trouble. Yeah. All right, all right, all right. Oh, that better move. Set their tongues alight. All of your flavors can set fiber alive. Very far from the regular levels are optimized. As we shine on that danger, please step aside. To dim the light, oh, I many men have tried. In no me, lick by no bow, as a ginger of a life. I get it if it suits my spec. You're feeling me, I suspect. Love me like you know I'm the best. Cause you know.
cause the girls all got nice. This is trouble. They never guaranteed the man. So trouble. And if by chance you're in the way, oh, you know, you're in trouble.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for December 12th, 2019. I'm Mary Sherman.
Today, we begin consideration of two articles of impeachment against President Donald J. Trump.
The House Judiciary Committee last night began to weigh articles of impeachment accusing President Donald Trump of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Committee Chair Democrat Gerald Nadler of New York opened the hearing by calling the facts overwhelming.
This committee now owes it to the American people to give these articles close attention and to describe their factual basis, meaning, and importance.
Republican members called the hearings a waste of time and accused Democrats of ignoring the facts. Republican Jim Jordan of Ohio said liberals won't stop attacking Trump because they don't like him and his supporters.
They don't like the 63 million people who voted for this president. All of us in flyover country, all of us common folk in Ohio, Wisconsin, Tennessee, and Texas, they don't like us.
Democrat Zoe Lofgren of California, the only lawmaker to work on three impeachment probes, called Trump's actions more serious than President Nixon's.
It's understandable that Republicans feel loyalty to the leader of their party, but loyalty to our country and our Constitution must be greater.
Trump is just the fourth president in U.S. history to face the prospect of such a sanction for misconduct in office, which could be approved next week by the House floor. The U.S. House passed an annual defense authorization bill Wednesday that includes two firsts. It will provide all federal workers with 12 weeks of paid parental leave, a provision agreed to by the White House in order to ensure the establishment of Space Force, a new branch of military service. The Senate is expected to take up the compromise bill and send it to the president's desk as early as next week. Washington's paid family and medical leave program is gearing up to give workers time off when they need it the most. Eric Tegedoff reports.
Starting in January, Washington will become the fifth state to offer comprehensive leave, allowing employees to take up to 12, and in some cases 18, weeks off to care for a new child, a loved one, or in the event of a medical emergency. Marilyn Watkins with the Economic Opportunity Institute says some employers in the state already offer leave benefits, but they're mainly for highly paid workers. Most lower-wage workers don't have this option. She says the goal of this program is to make leave accessible to everyone.
So that they can keep themselves healthy and be as healthy as they can be, that they can really nurture their young children as well as care for those sick family members in ways that benefit the health and well-being of everybody.
Benefits are funded through a payroll premium of 0.4% that began last January. Watkins says Washington State's efforts to provide leave are different because it has to build the program from scratch. The other four states added paid family leave to their already existing temporary disability insurance programs.
This is PNS. Central North Dakota has been in the spotlight as Burleigh County considered whether to stop accepting refugees based on a federal policy change. Even though the full plan failed, advocates say more education is needed.
Lutheran Social Services oversees refugee resettlement in North Dakota. The agency's Shirley Dykeshorn says while a lot of people opposed to accepting more refugees at the county level had informed opinions, there's still a lack of understanding in the general discussion.
There's a lot of confusion about what's the difference between a refugee and other types of immigrants.
County officials had signaled they would ban all refugees following a recent move by the Trump administration, giving local governments the authority to do so. But the county commission instead voted to cap the number for next year at 25.
That was Mike Moen reporting. Now to Kentucky, where advocates for reproductive rights say women in the state face yet another obstacle to receiving an abortion after the Supreme Court's refusal this week to hear a legal challenge to the law.
Kentucky Ultrasound Informed Consent Act mandates that doctors perform an ultrasound on women seeking an abortion and describe its images in detail. If there is a fetal heartbeat, the law requires physicians to make that heartbeat audible to the patient. The ACLU challenged the law to the high court, and staff attorney Heather Gitnerick says the court's decision signals the end of the legal fight to overturn the law.
Where this used to be an option for
patients, it is now forced on every patient. And there are plenty of situations where patients may not want to hear this information.
The law does not allow for any exceptions to providing ultrasound information, even in cases of rape or incest.
Maryland is among states where thousands of rape kits have sat untested in storage, and now millions of dollars are set to help police process the kits and help keep pace with new cases. Diane Bernard reports.
The funding is part of a new state law that requires police to submit most rape kits for forensic testing within 30 days unless the victim opposes testing. Lisa Jordan with the Maryland Coalition Against Sexual Assault says the state has a backlog of more than 6,000 untested rape kits going back decades.
Maryland just repeatedly and consistently failed to test rape kits. It's disrespectful to survivors, and it's something that we need to fix.
Maryland is providing $3.5 million in a new state fund for testing over the next 5 years.
If you want to contribute to more than a century of science about the feathered friends in your community, Audubon's Christmas Bird Count starts this weekend. Jonathan Hayes is executive director of Audubon New Mexico.
It helps us know what the birds in North America are doing over time, but also keys us into things that happen to bird population in short periods of time from 1 year to another.
I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics. Greene County businessman and founder of Fighting for Children PAC, Gary Greenberg, is planning to run for state senate. Greenberg on December 11th announced the formation of an exploratory committee to fill the 46th Senate district seat currently occupied by George Amador. Amador recently announced he would not seek re-election in 2020. A resident of New Baltimore, Greenberg actively lobbied for passage of the Child Victims Act, an experience that gave him a broader perspective on state issues, he said. Greenberg said in a statement, and I quote, "Public service is about fighting for the interest of the people you were elected to represent, getting laws passed, securing financial resources for local organizations," end quote. Pointing to the $6 billion budget gap lawmakers face next year, Greenberg signaled opposition to the idea of increasing taxes to close it. He said, and I quote, "We cannot simply continue to raise taxes in New York State. We need elected officials that have the ability to be independent and won't be a rubber stamp for unending tax increases. New Yorkers need jobs and a future. They need elected officials who can get that job done," end quote. Greenberg will compete with Michelle Hinchey for the Democratic nomination. And you can read the full story at New York State of Politics. WRGB-TV Albany is reporting Governor Andrew M. Cuomo vetoed a measure last week that would have allowed the state to commission a feasibility study for making 5 years old the mandatory age for starting kindergarten. The bill was proposed by Assemblymember Pat Fahey, a Democrat who represents parts of Albany County. He says New York is one of only a few states that still allow children to start kindergarten if they turn 5 on or before December 1st, allowing those with late fall birthdays to start before they turn 5. She argues that the age when a child starts formal school can impact their formative years. He said, and I quote, "Maybe the child was a great reader, but they might not have had the great motor skills. We have kids anywhere from age 4 to age 6 in the same kindergarten class. We need to even that out," end quote. Cuomo called the study an unnecessary expense, saying the information is already available and because the bill failed to assign the cost to the study. Fahey hopes to revisit this issue during the upcoming legislative session. And you can read the full story at CBS6Albany.com. Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Hudson Common Council will vote on the city's proposed new police contract December 17th, despite what Common Council President Tom DiPietro called an attempt by members of the Hudson Police Department to intimidate lawmakers during the course of a public meeting last month. DiPietro said, and I quote, "It was highly inappropriate for members of the force to come to our last meeting in full uniform, which can also be understood as an effort to intimidate.
As much as we value our police, they have no say on when or how we schedule what is to be discussed at our meetings, end quote. The contract was discussed by the council behind closed doors Monday. Chief Edward L. Moore and representatives of Local 3979 of the Law Enforcement Officers Union, Local 82, declined to respond to DiPietro's statement this week. Representatives of the union and some city officials signed a memorandum of agreement October 25th, constituting a tentative agreement effective January 1st, 2020 through December 31st, 2023. DiPietro, Second Ward Alderman Tiffany Garagia, as well as Police Committee Chair and Mayor-elect Kamal Johnson, have lamented the lack of transparency within city government during negotiations. They have alleged that details of the process and the resulting agreement were kept from them, making it difficult for lawmakers to do their due diligence prior to a vote. The approved agreement must be enacted by local law. Full disclosure, DiPietro is a WGXC volunteer programmer. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Governor Andrew M. Cuomo's press conference announced the Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over enforcement campaign is now in effect through January 1st. Cuomo announced December 11th that state and local law enforcement agencies throughout New York will step up patrols over the coming weeks to prevent impaired driving during the holiday season. The program is sponsored by Special Traffic Options Program for Driving While Intoxicated, with funding from the Governor's Traffic Safety Committee. During the 2018 campaign, police statewide arrested more than 4,000 people for impaired driving and issued 144,200 tickets for other vehicle and traffic violations, according to the governor's press release. And you can read the full statement at governor.ny.gov. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Together.